like today to look at the final section of 2 Samuel, chapter 16. I ought to give you a little context. Absalom's rebellion against his father is well underway. David and what is left of his court have fled away, and Absalom is arriving in Jerusalem. And it's an interesting passage we have before us today. It raises a number of issues, such as, what is God's will? And where do we hear it? So, let's consider the section from verse 15 until the end. Verse 15 begins by saying, meanwhile, Absalom and all the people, the men of Israel, came to Jerusalem. So from Absalom's point of view, this is a wonderful day indeed. His father has fled. He can now live like a real king in a real palace. He'll have soldiers to guard him and lackeys to do what he wants and courtiers to flatter him. The big and the powerful, the desirable and the fashionable, they are all now clamouring around the good-looking young king now occupying the throne. Of course, not all the people could come with him to Jerusalem. I think the text there means the influential people, the powerful people, the movers, the shakers, the influencers. They are all there. And chief among them is one Ahithophel. Now Ahithophel, of course, had been David's own counsellor, just like so many others. And the text specifically mentions that he is among them, and he is a key character. He is a powerful man, an influential man. And the last verse of the chapter even indicates that he is like a prophet. He is as one to whom people inquire of God. So he really is a very, very powerful figure. And of course he once worked with David, he once worked for David and served him, but now he is serving the usurper. And I'm sure, like me, many of you can look about and think of people who once appeared to walk with Christ, but now they're busy sitting with Absalom. And we live in days, I'm afraid, when the court of Absalom, of false religion, of counterfeit Christianity, is looking far more comfortable than the court of Christ, which seems to be living in a desert. Verse 16 goes on, and so it was when Hushai the Archite, Absalom, that Hushai said to Absalom, long live the king, long live the king. Now Hushai, you might recall from a previous week, is in fact a genuine friend of David, and he only finds himself at the court of the impostor because David has sent him there. In fact, he's gone there as a spy and as a counterweight to his rather less faithful former colleague Ahithophel, whom we heard mentioned in the previous verse. So in his heart, presumably, he would rather be back with David in a palace with Absalom. So when he approaches Absalom and says, long live the king, long live the king, he appears to be praising Absalom, but I wonder in his heart, is he really praising David with long life, not the usurper? The text still reminds us that, although he is currently at enemy headquarters, he is still, and I quote, David's friend. You know, we often, as believers, find ourselves in dark places at dark times, and yet we're still working for Christ. In which case, all is well. Right now, many of you are in your homes. You're not at church. Some of you might be listening in foreign countries where you don't even have a church to go to. But let me assure you, if you're living for Christ and you're working for Christ, you might be in a dark place. You might not be where you want to be. But you're still his friend, and he values that. Even though you might be among others who are not his friends, we're told that Hushai was David's friend. And right now, that's as great an accolade as anyone might be expected to have. Absalom, though, does not entirely believe Hushai. He asks him a rather pointed question. Is this your loyalty to your friend? Why did you not go with your friend? He asks in verse 17. How wonderfully hypocritical. Here is the son who would take his father's throne and life, and now he challenges another person for forsaking friendship. I'm reminded of the old adage that burglars don't wish to be burgled. People who commit fraud do not wish to suffer fraud. People who beat up others don't enjoy beatings. And here is a king who betrayed his father, worrying about one who may be betraying him. Even though we cannot live by it ourselves, we often acknowledge that there is a solid moral law which we would desire others keep. Jesus once told a fairly humorous story of those who would criticise a brother for having a speck of sawdust in the eye and therefore not being able to see clearly, whilst at the same time having a log in their own eye. Well, if Hushai has a speck of sawdust in his eye, Absalom surely has an entire forest in his. Hushai might have answered, why did you not stay with your father? But of course, this is not a debate. His aim is to infiltrate this wicked court, not to cause offence. In verse 18, he answers, No, but to whom the Lord and his people and all the men of Israel choose, his I will be, and with him I will remain. And he certainly speaks a degree of truth here. Now, the men of Israel's choosing is actually immaterial. Israel at this time is not an elected presidency, it is a God-anointed monarchy. In other words, whom God chooses, not whom the men of Israel chooses. It is no popularity contest. And yet he also talks about the one whom the Lord chooses. He is the rightful king. Of course, the one whom God chose was David, not Absalom. And therefore, Hushai is speaking truth. And yet I would urge you to choose Christ and to be his, and to be with him and his remain, not because he is popular with men or esteemed by the world, but because he is God's chosen, his beloved son. No, but whom the Lord and this people and all the men of Israel choose, his I will be, and with him I will remain. Beautiful words when spoken of Christ. Courageous words when spoken of David. Not great words when applied to Absalom. And Absalom, of course, assumes he is the subject of that statement. He continues, Furthermore, whom should I serve? Should I not serve in the presence of his son? As I have served in your father's presence, so will I be in your presence. Ironically, it might be that Absalom one day succeeded David naturally as king, in which case Hushai would have served him anyway. The current circumstances have therefore merely hastened that service and brought forward its beginning. Now, the usurping king does not answer Hushai in verse 19. So it might be that this young pretender accepts the answer and perhaps even enjoys it. And yet, let's make a point here about God's timing. It might be that Absalom was one day to become king. But this was not the day. In fact, he will never really become king. He will die as a rebel. David will outlive him. Let's not attempt to alter God's timing and providence. Doing so is as bad as denying it. No, we believers live according to God's divine plan, not our own self-constructed timetables. On the other hand, the words of Hushai might be taken to mean that by serving the Son, which he is currently doing, he is in fact serving the Father, and that is what David intended to happen. So although Absalom may have misunderstood the meaning of the words, Hushai is in fact entirely speaking truth. In verse 20, then Absalom said to Ahithophel, give advice as to what we should do. So here again the old counsellor now steps forward. We've heard so much about him. The text has made it absolutely clear that he too has come to Jerusalem. So what great oracle will the great man share? What advice will he give to the new king upon the throne? He tells him, go into your father's concubines, whom he has left to keep the house, and all Israel will hear that you are abhorred by your father. Now it was customary for new kings to take over the old king's collection of girlfriends. Like his other possessions, his jewels, his furniture, his concubines become the property of the new monarch. But this is not just about symbolism or slaking personal lust. No, Ahithophel wants a point to be made. He wants all Israel to hear about it, to know the utter contempt between the two, between King David and King Absalom. Fathers and sons are meant to love each other. Indeed, that relationship imitates the relationship between Adam and God when Adam was made in Eden. But sin and rebellion ruins that. They who were designed to love each other and cherish each other's company are now become enemies. And Ahithophel, I think, really wants to ensure that the two of them are never reconciled. Perhaps knowing that deep down, even now, David has a deep love for his rebellious son, Ahithophel wants to ensure that there is never reconciliation between the two. Why? Because he chooses to lose a great deal being a traitor. How Satan has always done his very best to drive deeper and further wedges between humanity and its loving creator, trying his very best to scupper reconciliation between the two. Still, Ahithophel gives a reason for the advice, that the hands of all who are with you will be strong. Now, how everybody being with him finding strength in the fact that he's gone in with a load of concubines, I'm not too sure. You see, sin never strengthens. It might assure the likes of Ahithophel that there is no turning back, but sin only drains and weakens and retards. It never enhances or makes better. Perhaps he thinks that within Absalom's heart there may be just an inkling of remorse, an awakening of conscience. By asking advice so quickly, he perhaps does indicate a degree of weakness or a feeling that he's gone in too deep, and Ahithophel may be wishing to strengthen his hand by ensuring there is a deep enmity between David and his wayward son. The 18th chapter of Leviticus forbids the sharing of partners between father and son. So this action is in one way more than just a string of rebellions against David. It is a two-fingered salute against God himself. Not to mention the fact that the women of this harem, that their views have not been consulted. In verse 22, they put the advice of Ahithophel into action. They pitched a tent for Absalom on the top of the house, and Absalom went into his father's concubines in the sight of all Israel. Now, why do it on the roof? So, I don't know how many concubines there are in this group who've been looking after David's house, but why do it on the roof? Well, a public declaration is being made. and sundry are to witness the insult offered by the Son to the Father. One would presume that a great many other people in ancient Jerusalem are sitting on their own rooftops, ogling and enjoying the sight. There's also, though, I think, a degree of judgment. Was it not from this very place that David first lusted after Bathsheba? In chapter 12, Nathan pronounces that David's wives will be given to an adversary, but it will be in public and under the sun rather than in private. Whereas David attempts to hide and cover up his adultery with Bathsheba, so part of the judgment pronounced against him would be public and before the sun. So although there is a tent preventing gaping eyes from seeing the actual action itself, it's done on a rooftop that David's judgment might be seen and known. Now, it seems a long time ago since I preached on David and Bathsheba. And in one respect, in the story, it happened even longer ago. Yet at the same time, we must always understand that the judgment of God will come, even though there is delay. Jesus said he would come and judge the world. He said that nearly 2,000 years ago. Yet all these years later, where is it? Well, a day is like 1,000 years, 1,000 years a day. Judgment comes even though it tarries. And here we have a judgment against David coming to fruition, even though it has appeared to tarry. And finally, in verse 23, we have a strange comment, I think laced with irony. Now, the advice of Ahithophel, which he gave in those days, was as if one had inquired of the oracle of God. So was all the advice of Ahithophel, both with David and with Absalom. Well, what does that mean? Well, this man Ahithophel has really become super powerful. He has been a leading advisor to David, and now he's a leading advisor to his son. David has followed his advice. Absalom follows his advice. In fact, the new king appears to act on his every word. And in that respect, it's almost like he is a prophet or an oracle of God. People come to him, the great, the good, and the powerful, and ask his counsel, and he gladly tells them what to do. And yet the irony is thickly mixed here, because his advice does not come from God, but rather from his own wickedness. Friends, beware of prophets and apostles who speak with great power and authority. They might use the language of Zion and even quote from bits of the Bible that suit their aim. But in fact, they're speaking on behalf of their own bellies and no more. You might also remember, if you're familiar with the text, that David has already prayed that the Lord would turn the advice of Ahithophel into foolishness. Indeed, all worldly wisdom, despite its fine articulation and clever reasoning, is bound to fade and fail in the light of God's revealed word and divine purpose. Right now, Absalom is on the throne, and he's enjoying himself in the tent on the palace rooftop. Ahithophel is arguably the most powerful man in the kingdom. All the fashionable people are now in Jerusalem, enjoying what may be the spectacular and fashionable reign of this young, good-looking king. But David's coming back. And in this world in which we live, in which a great many people live without God, die without God, speak without God, ignore him, some even hate him. Friends, rest assured, great David's greater son is coming back to reign. God bless and amen.